Hey, Drew Scott here.
And I'm Jonathan Scott, reminding you that life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance. They can help you get just the right protection at just the right price and help you save when you bundle home and auto. Kind of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. It'll be just right for you. We love a custom build. American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Hello and welcome. It is Eric Erickson here. The Eric Erickson Show. The phone number, 877-97-ERIC. That's 877-973-7425. You know, so I get up every morning. I plan the show. I get up about 6. I start outlining, go through the news of the day, decide what I want to do, the order I want to take it in, put the Georgia news in the second hour, put the big, big headlines in the first hour. I had a bunch of stuff I wanted to talk about, and it just suddenly got blown out of the water by China. China. It's always China. There is big, big, big breaking news. The Dow is, well, let's see, out of the gate here. Give you a chance. For those of you who are taking the show on delay, you should be taking it live right now because of stuff like this. The Dow is up right now on, it looks like 49 points. The NASDAQ down 28. The New York Stock Exchange down 8. It is only just happening. Apple is down. The people are expecting, based on the futures, that we may see the Dow Jones not do very well today. And the reason is because of this news. China announced it will impose additional tariffs on a total of $75 billion of U.S. goods in retaliation for President Donald Trump's latest planned levies on Chinese imports. Some of the countermeasures will take effect starting on September 1st, while the rest will come into effect on December 15th, according to the announcement from the Ministry of Commerce. This mirrors the timetable the U.S. has laid out for 10% tariffs on nearly $300 billion of Chinese shipments. An extra 5% tariff will be put on American soybeans and crude oil imports starting next month, and a 25% duty on U.S. cars will resume December 15th. The news from Beijing rekindled concerns about the world's two largest economies and a global growth outlook that's already looking shaky. U.S. stock futures dropped along with treasury yields and oil prices. Emerging market and commodity-related currencies declined, which havens such as yen and gold were supporting. The announcement comes as leaders from the Group of Seven Nations prepare to meet in France, and central bankers gather in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, to discuss issues such as the global slowdown. The Chinese announcement was foreshadowed by a tweet from Hu Zizhen, the editor-in-chief of the Global Times, a newspaper controlled by the Communist Party. He tweeted, "Based on what I know, China will take further countermeasures in response to U.S. tariffs on $300 billion in Chinese goods. Beijing will soon unveil a plan for imposing retaliatory tariffs on certain U.S. products. China has ammunition to fight back. The U.S. side will feel the pain." China promised earlier this week that any new tariffs from the U.S. would lead to escalation and retaliation. The U.S. had said it would increase tariffs on some Chinese goods, although the president was already delaying some because of the economic turbulence. I've got to tell you this, and you're not going to want to hear it, because I know people don't like the bad news. But this is, if the president doesn't respond quickly, this is the end of his reelection. And I say that seriously. I don't say it flippantly. The reason I say it is this. This is going to throw the stock market for the loop. And there's going to be lots of volatility. You're going to start hearing Washington say, if only the Fed would drop rates, the rates won't do it. Because what's happening is when tariffs are imposed, it is a tax. It is a tax on goods. And contrary to what Peter Navarro, the president's the trade guy and guy who convinced him to do a trade war, says, the actual way that tariffs are paid is the prices of the goods go up. So you get something coming in from China and there's a tariff imposed on it. The company is going to increase the price of the good so that you pay the tariff. Now, you may not understand this, you may not be able to process this, you may not gather what I'm saying, but consider this. The price of a six-pack of beer in this country has gone up. the price of a canned good in this country has gone up. The price of a six-pack of Coca-Cola has gone up. And it's only gone up by pennies, mind you, because the tax is spread over every can of beer, every can of Coke, every can of cream corn. But the price has still gone up. And, so you're buying a can of corn. And the can of corn, the price has gone up to 2 pennies because the cost of aluminum. Remember, Del Monte is now laying off 869 people because the aluminum tariffs are causing Del Monte to see declines in purchases and increased costs in purchasing equipment, things like that. So it's gone up 2 cents. You buy 5 cans of cream corn, suddenly you got a dime extra out of your pocket. Now you add in your 6-pack of beer and you got another dime. You go get your 12-pack of Coke. Well, now you got 20 cents. Right now you're up to 40 cents out of your, extra out of your pocket. You got to go buy gas for your car. Well, gas has gone up because of tariffs. It's wrecked the market on oil. You're building your house. Well, the amount of the cost of the nails, the cost of the screws, the cost of the shingles, all of that's gone up now. That's more money out of your pocket. China, contrary to what Peter Navarro, the president's advisor, says, China's not paying this. You are. And now here's the other thing. China's now imposing tariffs. You're not paying the money on the tariffs that China's. You're paying the tariffs for when the United States imposes tariffs on Chinese goods. You're paying the tariffs, or you're buying other products which are more expensive than the Chinese products prior to the tariffs. So either way, your spending's gone up. Now the Chinese are imposing tariffs on Americans. So the person who is going to buy the General Motors import is now going to buy the European import. And the result of that is you're not going to get the sale of the car to China. And as a result of not getting the sale of the car to China, you're not going to have a job if you work for GM, because fewer and fewer people are going to actually be buying GM cars. There are logical, foreseeable consequences to all of this stuff. And that's the unfortunate part of it. It's a logical consequence. And that's the frustrating thing here. Because we all could have seen this coming. And a lot of free marketeers advised the president and said, you know, Mr. President, you don't want to do this. Peter Navarro, the president's trade, I don't even really know what Peter Navarro does, other than gives the president bad advice. But he gave the president bad advice. The president took his advice, and now we're seeing the consequences. This isn't a good setup for the president of the United States. This isn't a good setup for the country. It's not something that we need as a country right now, when we're already on dubious ground around the world with other countries and how those countries' economies are going. And so this is going to throw the president's reelection into a tailspin if he doesn't do something quick. Now, was there an alternative? There was an alternative. Gary Cohn, when he worked in the White House, advised the president on going after China, but doing so slightly differently. And the way the Gary Cohn wanted the president to handle the trade war situation was to go to the World Trade Organization. The World Trade Organization has long treated China as a developing nation, not as a developed nation. And there needed to be a vote of the World Trade Organization to treat China as a developed nation. And the United States has the votes in the World Trade Organization to do just that. And the president's advisors told the president, if you go to the World Trade Organization and you do this, what you're going to have happen is the European countries are going to side with you. because the European countries would have sided with the president, they would have had the votes at the World Trade Organization to get China into developed nation status. Now, what would have happened if they had gotten China into developed nation status? Well, several things would have happened that would have been very, very important. First and foremost, what would have happened is the way that China gets most favored nation status around the world would have been adjusted. The second thing that would have happened is there were breaks China could get on certain trade management and the way certain the way China has to pay certain taxes and the way China can get around certain agreements, trade agreements in the world. Those the ways China could have gotten around those things has gone away, would have gone away. So with all of that happening, there would have been a way to get our concerns with China. Listen, it is objectively true that China has been playing fast and loose with the rules, and they've been getting away with stuff. Again, I played this audio yesterday. Let me play this. This is John King on CNN acknowledging the president is right. Let's see. We're having some sound issues here. I will find this audio and play it for you here in a second. Essentially what John King was saying is that the president is right, that there have been a whole bunch of things that other presidents have not done, and President Trump finally decided to do them. Whether he's going about doing them in the right way or not is something to be decided. Whether or not the president has decided that he's pursuing it in the right way, whether or not the president has decided that, in fact, he should have done the trade war route instead of the World Trade Organization route. All these things matter. And the president just went about it, unfortunately, in a bad way. And the problem here, of course, is that by the way the president went through these things, the trade war could be escalated. Now, I didn't intend to start with this stuff, but it is a rather big deal. It's a rather big deal because Washington should have known these things. It was logically, easily predictable these things would happen. The president had a bunch of people who were whispering in his ears. And, well, bad things tend to happen.
On the trade war. He actually tried to distance himself from his own trade war.
That's Obama's fault. And look, the president is absolutely right when he says that China has been cheating for 25 years, and that Bill Clinton didn't do enough about it, George W. Bush didn't do enough about it, Barack Obama didn't do enough about it, or didn't want to pick the fights for other reasons, thought there were reasons the U.S. economy is benefiting so much, we won't pick these fights. Start the conversations, not finish the conversations. The president is absolutely right. The question now is the uncertainty about the tariffs are a big contributing factor to the possibility of an American recession, to the obvious fact of global slowdown in China, in Germany, across Europe. And the president has to make a decision. This is a political decision now as well as an economic decision. Is he willing to cut a bad deal or a modest deal, a compromise deal with China? He seemed to indicate no. Is he willing to go into an election year where if he does not, the U.S. economy might go into a recession. It might stop short of going into a recession, but still slow down significantly and hurt him politically. The president actually deserves a lot of credit for standing up to China. A lot of people out there will cringe at that. A lot of people question how he's done it. Mm-hmm. Standing up to China is not a bad thing. You can question, I'm not smart enough to tell you whether this day or that day or this tariff is the right way to do it. But now is he thought that they would work this out by now.
Yeah, he thought they would work it out by now. They haven't worked it out. And now it's going to have a impact on his reelection. The stock market is not going to respond well to this. And when people's 401ks start getting hurt because of the trade war, and there are signs that it's already starting to happen. Listen, the president can accuse Democrats of talking down the economy all he wants, but the trade war with China, and again, John King is right. This president decided to make a stand, make a fight. He was right to do it. There were ways to do it through the World Trade Organization, but the president wanted a big trade war. Well, he got his trade war, and he thought he was going to be able to cut a deal with China, and China has decided no. I will tell you what's going to happen, and I mean this very seriously. You're going to start hearing Republicans say that China is helping the Democrats, just like Russia is alleged to have helped the Republicans, really wasn't. They're going to say China's doing this to help the Democrats. And really, China's doing this because they want to hurt the United States. China wants to be a global superpower. It thinks it is a global superpower, And it's got to hurt the United States in order to do that. And the president, by opening this trade war instead of going through the World Trade Organization, doesn't have the backing of the rest of the world. He could have if he went through the WTO, if he had listened to Steve Mnuchin and Gary Cohen and Wilbur Ross. Instead, he listened to Peter Navarro. He needs to fire Peter Navarro yesterday, get this thing back on track, or it's really going to hurt him out there.
Want to be on the show? Call Eric now at 877-973-7425. That's 877-97-ERIC with a CK.
All righty. Now that I've gone through the trade war stuff, I guess I can get to all the stuff I actually wanted to talk about today. Home sales. That's what I'm talking about. Home sales have gone up. Defying the odds of an economic slowdown. At the same time, jobless claims have gone down yet again. It's an interesting setup. So I'm delighted by the news, and the president should take heart in the news. And, you know, so here's the thing. China is in the trade war taking the gamble that the U.S. economy can be thrown into recession, and it can, but the U.S. economy has more padding in its economy than China and Europe. One of the reasons is because the United States is a big country of 350 million very diverse people, and we're not dealing with things like Brexit, and we're not dealing with things like the Hong Kong situation. So we got a margin of error. Now, the other thing is the Obamas. They've bought a $15 million mansion in Martha's Vineyard. And I have no problem with Barack Obama buying a $15 million mansion. I really don't. I don't think it's a problem. Good for him. I'm a little bit troubled that someone can be a public servant and in being a public servant can then buy a $15 million mansion. But in fairness, he did get it because he wrote a bunch of books and his wife wrote a bunch of books and they sold very well. I totally get that. But, you know, there's also this thing out there where the media is lamenting the president's referring to himself as the second coming and the king of the Jews and whatnot. If you'll remember, Newsweek's cover for Barack Obama referred to his second term as the second coming. Likewise, there were a bunch of people out there who referred to Obama as their savior. There were a bunch of people out there who made Jesus references to Obama, and the media went out of their way to frame the seal of the presidency behind Barack Obama's head to make it look like a halo on multiple occasions. And then there's Barack Obama himself.
Change will not come if we wait for some other person or if we wait for some other time. We are the ones we've been waiting for.
Yeah, we are the ones we've been waiting for. That was Barack Obama saying things like that. The media would always give him a pass, and they'll give him a pass on this $15 million mansion that they probably wouldn't give a Republican a pass on. And I'm jealous. It's a beautiful house on Martha's Vineyard. But Barack Obama was also the man who said, you know, at some point you just made enough money. And you don't necessarily need to keep making that much money. And not everybody needs a house on Martha's Vineyard. Those are all things Barack Obama said. And everybody was okay with that. Then there is the media meltdown happening. I don't know if you've heard, Andrew McCabe has signed on to the White House or to CNN as a contributor. And in so doing, CNN is going to let a guy who the inspector general within the Department of Justice said on multiple occasions lacked candor. They fired him. He lacked candor. CNN is hiring him as a political contributor. Yesterday, CNN was in full meltdown that Sarah Sanders was being hired by Fox News as a political contributor and that Sean Spicer was going to be on Dancing with the Stars. I got to tell you guys, the meltdown over Sean Spicer being on Dancing with the Stars was actually kind of crazy. You had I saw a woman yesterday, in fact, on my local show in Atlanta. I read the tweet, the woman said how she can't watch football anymore because she's so mad at the football caving in on Donald Trump. She this, that, and the other she hates now because of Donald Trump. Dancing with the Stars was her favorite show, and now she can't watch Dancing with the Stars because Donald Trump has ruined that as well. I got to tell you, that says more about her than Donald Trump. The amount of people out there who put politics into everything. Did you know that the Popeye's chicken sandwich that's come out is a political thing now? The New Yorker is telling liberals they need to find Popeye's and have that fried chicken sandwich to essentially atone for the sin of liking Chick-fil-A. I'm not making that up, by the way. They're using quasi-religious language to tell liberals you need to go eat at Popeye's instead of Chick-fil-A because their chicken sandwich isn't bigoted like the chicken sandwich at Chick-fil-A. Why do liberals oppose a pickle between two buttered buns? I don't understand why they're so opposed to the Chick-fil-A sandwich, but they are. But you've got a Popeye's now, so you can go be absolved of your sins. It is Eric Erickson here, the Eric Erickson Show. Want to be a part of the program? Boy, we were having some technical hiccups this morning. They're fixed. You know, new show, Stretch Our Legs, 10 days into this. I was talking to a friend of mine at Cumulus, which is one of the big radio companies in the nation. He was saying they vetted a guy. They wanted him to do a sports talk radio show. He had been a famous player who will go nameless. Guy was so excited, wanted to do talk radio, just absolutely in love with the idea of it. It did it for 2 weeks, got to the 10th day, which is where we are with the show. Went in after the show was over and said, I quit. Just the idea of a 3-hour talk show was awesome for him until he did it. And then he just absolutely hated the idea of it. I get it. I get it. It's a slow going thing trying to grow a radio show. You go for multiple weeks. You don't get callers. It's just you. You're wondering if anybody's even listening. And yet you do it if you love it. And this is I fell into this by accident. In fact, you know, I guess I had been around enough here. Let me tell the story. So I was a lawyer. I was a lawyer for 6 years. I went to Mercer Law School, went to Mercer undergrad. Went to Mercer Law School, met my wife, stayed in Georgia instead of moving back to Louisiana, and began practicing law. Now, I didn't intend to practice law. What I intended was to go to Washington, D.C. I was working for Saxby Chambliss at the time, then the congressman before he became a senator, and he said that a law degree was like an MBA for politics. It would open doors for you in Washington. That's what I wanted to do. Well, I wound up, I had a knack for fixing computers, and Saxby needed computers fixed in his office, and that's how I kind of started working for him on his campaign. I was the head of the State College Republicans here in Georgia and wound up getting a job at a law firm, helping them with their computers. That became a job while I was in law school, became a legal job, became a lawyer. And one day in 2004, some buddies of mine started the website redstate.com. They put me in charge of it. And MSNBC hired me to be the conservative. They hired four of us. I was the only conservative to go to New York and cover the last week of the Bush-Kerry election. It was a lot of fun. I loved it. Started doing TV from there for a little bit. But one of the partners of the law firm came in and said, do you know what the definition of a dumb blankety blank is? And I said, no. He said, you don't like practicing law, go do politics. It's about 2 weeks before my wife had our first child in 2005, I told her I was going to quit practicing law and become a blogger. Went over exactly as you expect, exactly as you expect. So I left practicing law, took a job in Washington for a year, was commuting back and forth. We weren't making money on Red State at the time, so I was commuting back and forth to D.C. every week. And then we put up ads at Red State. We were making money hand over fist because everybody, it was the most popular, widely read political site in Washington for blogs from a right of center perspective. And we were making money hand over fist. And it was going well. And then the Democrats took back control of Congress in 2006 and wiped out our revenue stream. But a group in D.C. bought us and I kept on the job. So sometime, I guess in 2009, I live in Macon, Georgia, and the local radio show host got arrested in a crack house. I'm not making that up. WMAC, 940 WMAC in Macon, and he got arrested. And they needed somebody to be on. And I had been on radio once before talking about some cases I was working on, had a relationship with a news guy, and he called and said, hey, do you want to do this? Heck yeah, what the heck? I do politics now. I wouldn't mind doing this. So I got on. I had never done radio before in my life. And I was doing 6 to 9 in the morning. And that day turned into a week. That week turned into 3 months, and I got paid in an expired gift certificate to Outback Steakhouse. Now, people tell me all the time, well, they come as a credit card. Huh? They don't expire. This expired. It was so old. In fact, it was a paper gift certificate. It wasn't even a little credit card thing. And they had kept them, I guess, from a prize pack or something, and that's what they gave me. And so I had to buy my meal at Outback that night with my wife. It was a little bit embarrassing. But nonetheless, I really loved it. I was like, man, I would love to do this. Well, then I got hired by CNN. And so my radio days went away, and I started doing CNN. I was a political contributor analyst for CNN for 3 years. And in 2010, WSB Radio in Atlanta fired their evening guy. And he wound up getting, he was hired down in Macon, and that's why I was only on for 3 months. They hired that guy, so I went away. They put that guy on. Well, he stirred up so much trouble in Macon that he wound up getting promoted by Cumulus from WMAC in Macon out to Dallas, Texas. And they were free, so they said, hey, you want to come back? So again, I went back, did 6 a.m. to 9 a.m., again, completely for free. I didn't even want the gift certificate this time. I didn't trust them, but I did it for free. And I was really hoping they may make me an offer, but I was doing so much other stuff. I just really couldn't do 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. My wife had some health issues. We now had 2 kids. I was on CNN all the time. I was running Red State. I was exhausted already. I loved it, but there was no way. Well, this random guy calls me and says he represented WSB in Atlanta, where that other guy had been. They were looking to hire somebody for his slot. And did I want a show on the weekend? And I said, absolutely not. I'm working all this other time. I don't have time for a weekend show. And the guy said, okay. Would you at least come fill in for Herman Cain one night? I said, sure, I'll fill in for Herman. I knew Herman. He had been to several of my conferences that I do every year. Nice guy. Went up, filled in for Herman. At the end of the show, all the suits come in and say, okay, so we really don't want you to have a weekend show. We like your show down in Macon. The president of the company had heard me on the radio a couple times. And would you like his show? And I was like, let me ask my wife. And I said, yeah, sure. I'll take the show. My wife was fine with it. Herman was running for president, and I couldn't tell anyone that's what was happening, but Herman was running for president. They needed somebody to take his job. They didn't know I wasn't actually a radio show host until after I signed up. I made sure not to say anything. I made it sound like, yes, it was Eric Erickson's show, Eric in the Morning, and WMAC, and Macon, Georgia. And yeah, no, it was all a lie. Totally fell into it by accident. Had that guy not gotten arrested in a crack house, I would never have been on radio. It is funny the way the Lord shakes things up sometimes. What is it? The scripture says you plan your heart planned your path and the Lord set your feet, something like that. In Proverbs 16, yes, I had no plans to do what I'm doing. And now here I am doing this show, doing 2 radio shows. Been on radio now since 2011, and we're 10 days into this show, and I love it. Whether I get calls or not, I get to come on and be in charge and talk and just enjoy myself and talk about things. I hate talking points. And one of my frustrations with so many people on TV in particular, but some in radio as well, is you just get the talking points from your local political party. You don't learn anything. You don't think outside the box or anything like that. I would much rather just tell you what I'm thinking. I'm also in seminary, too, although I've been on sabbatical, I guess, for 6 months because I've been trying to get the show off the ground. So I haven't been in class. I need to go back. Classes start next week, and I'm thinking of going back. I sat working on my PhD in theology at Southeastern Baptist. I had been at Reformed Theological. The only reason I went to seminary, to be honest with you, is I do talk about faith and culture on this and my other show, and I write about it a lot, and kept getting invited to give sermons. And I felt really creepy going into a church and preaching when I had never been to seminary. So I finally decided I should go to seminary. Well, I went to a Reformed seminary, and all the good little Baptist churches that were inviting me to come preach on Sunday when they found out I was going to a Reformed seminary, they said, nope, we're good, thanks. So I occasionally do get to preach. I like preaching way more than I like talking about politics. And try not to do it too much on this show. But nonetheless, there we are. That's me. Now, let me read you this story. It will delight your heart. The phone number as well, if you want to be a part of the program, 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. Headline from Haley Peterson. I tried to buy a gun at Walmart twice, and roadblocks left me empty-handed both times. Now, you need to understand the setup for the story. The media constantly reports a talking point that it is far easier to buy a gun than buy cold medicine. David Hogg, the kid from Parkland High School, said this, that it's easier to buy cold medicine than it is to buy a gun. And you hear reporters parrot this all the time. It's easier to buy a gun than it is to buy cold medicine. You've got to show your ID to get cold medicine. You don't have to do anything to buy a gun. That's not exactly true. So Walmart is under fire because of the El Paso shooting and progressive activists demanding they get rid of guns from their stores. Walmart's not doing that so far. They remember what happened to Dick's Sporting Goods after all. Dick's decided to get rid of all of its guns and its sales declined. So this reporter decided to go in and show that it's easier to buy a gun than buy cold medicine. The availability of guns at Walmart has become a hotly debated subject. In the wake of two deadly shootings at its stores that killed 24 people, more than 128,000 people have signed a petition urging Walmart to stop selling guns and take a stronger stance against firearms. I went to Walmart with the intention of buying a gun last week as part of an investigation into the placement, selection, marketing, and security of firearms at Walmart stores and to learn the processes governing gun sales. In other words, she never bought a gun before. She didn't know. She probably believed it. So she admits it became more complicated. Walmart has said that about half of its 4,700 U.S. stores sell guns. I searched Walmart.com and Google on August 13th to find which of the 10 Walmart stores near me sold guns, and I failed to come up with any definitive answers. The only guns advertised on Walmart's website are air guns. After about 30 minutes, I gave up and turned to the phone. I figured the employees would know. I was wrong. Over an hour and a half, I placed more than a dozen calls to multiple stores, waited on hold for 40 minutes, got through to humans only three times. Three Walmart employees told me they didn't know which store sold guns. One person referred me to Walmart's main customer service line. I called the number. They couldn't help me when it comes to item availability. They don't want us to discuss it for various reasons. So she had to go to all the stores. The customer service representative advised me to call each store individually. When I told him I had spent more than an hour doing just that, several stores weren't answering the phones. He said I could file a report. Someone answered a phone at the Walmart Supercenter in Chesterfield, Virginia. She transferred me to Sporting Guns, where the woman confirmed I could buy a gun there and it was only 30 minutes away and she could get her Sudafed too, I bet. But it would be more difficult than buying a gun. So she says, on my way to the department, I walk past shelves of school supplies, the toy department, the bike store. I spotted guns on display directly under the sign for the sporting goods department. There were no signs promoting or advertising the guns, though. Walmart's faced a backlash. They have air guns, they have pellet guns, they have BB guns used to propel projectiles such as pellets. I browsed the shelves of ammunition. Walmart said recently that it accounts for about 2% of all gun sales and 20% of all ammunition sales in the United States. After a few minutes, a Walmart manager arrived at the gun sales counter. She said I could not buy a gun that day because no authorized firearm seller was scheduled to work. What? What's this, huh? Confusion sets in. She said I could come back on Thursday, 2 days later. A Walmart spokesman later told me that to sell firearms, employees must pass both an enhanced criminal background check and annual online training that includes a mock gun transaction. Walmart also complies with state-specific requirements where applicable. Illinois, for example, requires people who sell guns to have a firearm owner identification card issued by state police. Then she had to fill out the form. Oh, my goodness. Well, on Thursday, she went back. She arrived at the sporting goods store around noon. There was no one attending the counter by the firearms. After waiting 10 minutes, I walked to another aisle, found someone to help me, said she wanted to buy a gun. She said she was an authorized seller and she could help me. We walked back to the gun display where she picked up a phone and called someone. Can you meet me at the front to help with the gun sale? She charged me $2 for a federal background check and then left the counter and returned a few minutes later with a Department of State Police Virginia firearms transaction record and told me to complete the form. The form asked several questions. My name, address, social security number, race, gender, U.S. What? What a bigoted form. It asked for her race and gender, but not her sex. And asked if she was a U.S. citizen. And then under a section called certification of transferee, it asked about my criminal record. In red print, the form said an untruthful answer may subject you to criminal prosecution. The seller told me my background check would likely be completed within a few minutes. Well, there was a hang-up. She failed the background check. She couldn't buy the firearm. Why? Because she needed to bring in a government-issued document with her correct address. Because her address on her driver's license did not align with the address that was on file for her because she had moved. So she couldn't buy the firearm after 2 days of trying at the local Walmart. And if you think that's bad, man, you should read about how hard it was for her to buy Sudafed.
Well connected and well respected. It's Eric Erickson, live every weekday.
Hello there. The phone number here, 877-97-ERIC. That's 877-973-7425. Are you ready to invade? No, not Greenland. No, you thought I was going to suggest we invade Greenland. I mean, I would totally be cool with an invasion of Greenland. You know, the Danish prime minister says we've grown past the days where you buy lands and people. If that's the case, invasion it is. But no, that's not actually what I'm talking about. No. Are you ready for the invasion of Brazil? I, honest to goodness, I got to admit to you, even I thought I was being facetious. On Twitter last night, you can follow me on Twitter at EW Erickson. On Twitter last night, I suggested that it would only be a matter of time before progressives said, we must invade Brazil to stop them using their land. You know, it's a big scandal in Brazil. There are huge wildfires in the Amazon. Global warming. Except it turns out it's not actually global warming. It's caused by a lot of Brazilian farmers clearing land. And they're slowly wiping out the Amazon rain basin because they want the land for farms. They got a growing population. They need land for food. And they're using their own land, private property. You know, it's awful. How dare they use their land? It actually is, and I don't want to make too much light of it. It actually is a problem. The Amazon rainforest does act as a sink for carbon. It releases oxygen into the world. The Amazon rainforest is actually necessary for balance on the planet. You got to feel bad for Brazil. They've got this thing. They could find ways, I guess, to be able to tap it, except a lot of environmentalists have for years put all sorts of onerous burdens on the ability to process and manage the rainforest. So the Brazilian president now said, to heck with this, you just clear the land. Well, now there are these massive wildfires that have started. And I said just flippantly, how long will it be before progressives decide we need to invade Brazil to protect the rainforest from the Brazilian people? Y'all, they've already started before I even tweeted. Going back to 2012, actually, my friend Dan Mitchell, who worked at the Cato Institute, sent me a link that there were a series of articles by a professor back in 2012 arguing that, yes, in fact, we need to invade Brazil to stop it. Let's see. This is from Stephen Walt. This is Dan Mitchell writing about this. Stephen Walt, a professor at Harvard, has suggested in Foreign Policy magazine, in Foreign Policy magazine, no less. That's like the pretentious Foreign Policy magazine for the super elite. It may be necessary to invade Brazil. How far would you go to prevent forest fires, to prevent irreversible environmental damage? In particular, do states have the right or even the obligation to intervene in a foreign country in order to prevent it from causing irreversible and possibly catastrophic harm to the environment. I raised this issue in light of the news that Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro is accelerating development of the Amazon rainforest. What should or must the international community do to prevent a misguided Brazilian president or political leaders in other countries from taking action that could harm all of us? So now the professor has mentioned maybe sanctions, maybe protectionism, but also international law authorizes countries to go to war for self-defense, or when the Security Council authorizes military action. It's even legal to attack another country's territory preemptively, provided there's well-founded basis. Destroying the Amazon rainforest presents a clear and obvious threat to many other countries. I don't mean to single out Brazil. It would be an equally radical step to threaten the United States or China if they refuse to stop emitting so many greenhouse gases. It might seem far-fetched to imagine states threatening military action to prevent this today, but it's becoming more likely if worst-case estimates about our climate future turn out to be correct. Here you have it, folks. The invasion of Brazil. Progressives, you know what's going to happen here. So academics, they talk about the BRIC nations. Brazil, Russia, India, and China. Those are the up-and-coming second-world countries, although China really at this point should be classified as a first-world country. In its cities, it certainly is. And the BRIC countries, they stand in contrast like the G7, which are the major global economic superpowers, the developed world. And about the rise of these countries and how these countries are going to displace the G7 countries. Well, now suddenly Brazil is bad because Brazil decided to go for a gun-loving conservative president who's willing to allow the people who own private property in areas of jungle to clear the land to grow crops. And that's bad. So you've actually got law-loving, peace-loving progressives claiming they need to invade Brazil to stop Brazilians from controlling their own land. Talk about elite colonial opinion. I thought colonization was a bad thing, and here they want to embrace it.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.